So, dear Thai, dear Sangha, dear friends, we're going to share briefly, just 10 minutes each, something like that, on a teaching from the tradition of Buddhism, and as our teacher, Thai, has very clearly made very clear this teaching, a teaching about what is true love. And for those of us that are not familiar with the five mindfulness trainings, you might not have heard of this expression, true love, but it's the third of the five mindfulness trainings. And it's a wonderful subject for us to contemplate and to help us be concrete in the way in which we practice to increase our capacity to be able to really be our best for those that we love, and to offer them the best we can, so that because we care about them. So perhaps we use the expression true love just because love is used for so many things. We can say we love burritos, or we love this and that. We love our iPad. And of course there's also romantic love. And sexual desire, which can be get mixed up with this teaching. Which is distinguished from this teaching. This teaching actually applies to, it can include, very much include, the love between partners, but it's about the love for all the objects of our love, including our our whole family, and the love we have for society in general. So it's the wider definition of love. So the Buddhist tradition, there is something, it's actually predates the Buddhist tradition. Brahmanic times, the what we would call now the Hindu tradition of the Vedas, etc. They had this teaching, and the Buddha very much embraced it and included it in his teachings. So it's called. That's why it has the term the four Brahma Viharas. So it's the Vihara is the abode of the Brahma. So those that are spiritually awakened in the Hindu tradition, the Brahmas, more so, they have where is their home, and it's in these four ingredients we're going to talk about of true love. So the Buddha was said to say that if one was to practice the way of meditation, the path, the Noble Eightfold Path, and meditate deeply and practice the four Brahma Viharas, one would arrive very deeply at enlightenment. That was his way of sharing about how much he revered this teaching. So we call it true love, and it has, as I say, four ingredients to make this cake. The first one, and I'm going to offer you some Sanskrit terms, mostly just for fun, because it's nice to get a bit exotic, but it also, it's good to stay connected with the root of where they come from. So So don't be put off by them. But my tree, if I spell it any wrongly, my brother will let me know. Is it? It has the, yeah. And my tree is the first one. In fact, I'm going to talk about my tree and the second one, and then Brother Faplin will talk about three and four. So I'll stick to my tree can be translated as friendship or friendliness. Let's call it friendship. Sometimes translated as loving kindness. If we have friends, we know the feelings we have of towards a friend are usually, we say friendly, we say we have that loving feeling towards them. They bring us joy and happiness to feel connected, and they're there for us in times when we need. Can you all see? Sort of. So it's quite a good meditation to go into what do we mean by friendship? What is friendship for us? What qualities, what aspects do we value when we talk about friendship? Like trust. We trust that the other person is there for us and that they have our best intentions at heart. And we also, when we have a real, really good friend, we know that whatever we share, they will listen in a place of non-judgment. They might, so they'll be there for us even if we mess up. And they will forgive and find it in their heart to give us space to make mistakes. That kind of aspect. So Maitri is the first ingredient of true love. And when we talk about offering friendship, it's useful to bring in the mantras here, which is another topic. But let me just say, when you can say to your loved one, be it your grandfather, your friend, your close friend, your sister, you offer friendship, or your partner, because in our partners, we want to be a friend for them. So part of this is to be able to say to them, I'm here for you. So we offer our presence. So friendship is concrete in the sense that we actually are able to show up for each other. So to be able to say, I am here for you. And if you say, I am here, it means that you practice to come back to yourself so that you can actually be present in yourself to be able to offer your presence to the other one. So there's a lot contained in that simple phrase. And there is another mantra I'm just going to share here that very well goes in with this friendship, and that is, I know you are there. I know you are there. You recognize the other person's presence. You see them and you acknowledge, there you are. I know you are there. And we can add, and I am very happy. Be happy. Be happy to be with you, my good friend. Yeah. So, if we can offer friendship to those that we love, it's in this spirit, as I've been sharing. And we might also consider, because every one of these aspects of true love should apply to how our relationship, all of our relationships, and there's one key relationship that we often forget, and that's our relationship to ourself. So we may be very forgiving and accepting of our friends, have a lot of time for them, for their problems, for what's going on for them. But do we offer that to ourselves? That's a question that you can ask, because that's an aspect of practicing love for yourself. The second of the four ingredients of true love, Sanskrit word again, karuna. And karuna is usually translated as compassion. And compassion sort of has, there's a French connection here with passion meaning suffering, and come with, so to suffer with somebody. So when somebody's suffering, you're kind of there with them, going down into what's happening for them. So that connects you to this sort of empathetic relationship. So you have empathy, you can connect with their suffering. You feel for them, and that's beautiful. But this word contains a bit more than that. Is it? And because one thing that can happen, even if we have a lot of empathy, a lot of compassion, there's a lot of good intention there, but we may not have the capacity to not be overwhelmed by the suffering of our friend or of the situation. Somebody this morning was sharing about being overwhelmed by the situation in Palestine. There's many things we can be overwhelmed with, and just that's a big thing. And we can also have experience of just being overwhelmed by the suffering of another person, and just not being able to, you know, we have the good intention, but we have our limits. So karuna is that capacity to be able to really be there and hold the suffering, not be overwhelmed by it, but even more than that, the capacity to be able to relieve the suffering of that's in the other person, or ourselves if we're practicing self-compassion. And so I'm going to write that definition down as the capacity to relieve suffering. And Thay has often said, can we find a better English word than compassion that gives this sense? So just to also say, to make it concrete about what this could mean, this capacity to relieve suffering, how is to develop this capacity to listen is a big part. In friendship, we have, I'm going to add a little thing, and that is loving speech. It fits well with the friendship one. And you'll know the fourth mindfulness training is loving speech and deep listening. And if we put deep listening here, of course, loving speech can help relieve somebody's suffering, but I'm going to emphasize deep listening, as in order to understand, but even before that, in order to simply be able to offer your presence, your mindfulness, your stability to somebody that is going through suffering, that is in touch with a difficult moment in their life, and you being able to be there at that time, hold their hand, breathe with them, is huge. Being able to just listen, to give them an opportunity to express identify, in fact, what is going on for them. What is going on may not be apparent to them immediately. They may not be able to get a handle on it. But if you are able to just stay present and they feel the safety, there is something in them that comes up and they suddenly can maybe start to say what it is. They can start to express, this is it, this is my suffering. And just being able to get it, there it is, can be a big relief, and to feel that it's seen and it's heard, it's shared, and that they felt safe to do that was because of your capacity to be able to be solid and there for them at that time and give them time to listen. These things take time, but not so long. When the quality of the deep listening is there, it's, you know, we can listen to a lot of complaining of somebody and nothing seems to change. But when we really get to the place of deep listening, that's something different, and things can change quite rapidly. Of course, it somewhat relies on the other person having the courage to go there. And if that is their intention to really get the healing, then it's a very good conditions. Yeah. So learning the art, the capacity to listen deeply, is part of our practice of compassion. And of course, again, it applies directly to us, learning how to listen to ourselves. You could say that sitting meditation is a time for deep listening, listening in to what is going on in our body and in our mind. And when we have that, we can offer it. When we have that ability to be there and to be able to go through a strong emotion is part of what deep listening is. So that, because emotions come up, and if we can stay stable and breathing, we can go through that emotion, embracing it and staying calm and maintaining peace and stability with the storm of the emotion that comes up. If we can do that for ourselves, we can sit and be there for somebody else. When the tears come, it's okay. You're there breathing. You encourage them to breathe, not to suppress their emotion, but to breathe with what's happening, the discharge of the emotional energy, for instance. So that's a little bit on. And just to say that often people do think that the aspect of being able to stay calm when somebody's suffering means you're not compassionate, but it's like a doctor or a mother. Even the baby is crying, the mother can smile because she knows that it will pass, but she also knows that her job is to stay with the baby and to take care. And a doctor who can smile even though somebody has a terrible injury, because the doctor knows he has the capacity to relieve the suffering, so he's not frightened and overwhelmed by the situation. So it's that kind of spirit of the meaning of the word. And just finally to say, deep listening is the quality of the Bodhisattva Avalokiteshvara, the Bodhisattva of great compassion, the one who knows how to listen deeply and to relieve the suffering of all beings. Leave. Thank you. So Brother Phap Lin will share about 3 and 4.
Where am I? So, number three. Mudita is something like joy. Sometimes it's translated sympathetic joy or empathetic joy. It's kind of, but I like just joy. And yeah, I think I find this very very helpful. It was helpful for me to reflect. When, before I became a monk, I was in a long-term relationship, as Brother Phaplai shared. And I was together with my partner for, I think, about 8 years, 8 or 9 years, before we both decided to join the monastic community. And there was definitely a point in our relationship when I, when we first got to know each other, it was all kind of, you know, like that. You know, it was it was very, very passionate, very exciting. Everything's very dramatic. But maybe we actually also made each other suffer quite a bit. And coming into contact with this practice, because we went to Plum Village together quite a bit, we started hearing a little bit more about this. And I remember Tai sort of offering the reflection. He said, you know, is your love really true love if you just make each other cry? You know, if it's, it can be very dramatic, but it can also be very destructive. And we sometimes can kind of, yeah, I think we have an image in our society of mad, passionate love at first sight, and there is, it has a kind of destructive element, but we kind of like it, you know. We kind of, it's kind of attractive, that that mad, passionate, irresistible force that just sweeps through and destroys everything in its path. And, you know, it's okay, but I think this is better. I think for us, when we started realizing that if our love was to be true love, then we needed to be able to make each other happy, quite simply. And the same goes for any kind of relationship, whether it's our parents, our friends, our teachers, or anyone. The capacity to offer joy is a very beautiful one to develop. And there's one very easy way. We'll give you a little bit of homework. You can try this. Okay, it's scientific. Okay, yeah, I'm not saying that it works. You have to try it and see for yourself. Okay. It's another little Plum Village mantra, and it's very interesting. It's challenging. Okay, so try this at home. This is a happy moment. And I remember when Tai first shared this mantra with the community, such as just a few years ago, I really didn't like it. I really, really, really didn't like it, because I felt like, well, how can you just say that? You know, what if it's not a happy moment? You can't just, you know, just say that. I found it really irritating. but as I saw, you know, how to use it, how to practice it, I started to realize that it's not got anything to do with the moment itself. This isn't to convince you that there's something, you know, that this moment is happy. It's actually to remind you that you can make it happy by taking care of your mind, by taking care of your perceptions. So it's up to you to make it a happy moment. And any moment can become a happy moment when we look at it the right way, when we tell the story of that moment in the right way. And sometimes it's just as simple as remembering, you know, the good conditions that we have. So it might be, you know, sitting down for a meal with friends. You suddenly just take a moment and say, guys, this is a happy moment. Yeah? It's amazing because actually if you just stop and notice, then it becomes happy. You go, wow, actually, yeah, this is pretty cool. This isn't bad. You know? If you wanted to make it more English, you could say, this is an okay moment. This moment's all right. And yeah, so experiment with it. Try it. Because it's really just about remembering the conditions for happiness that we have in any moment. And it might just be like our body. Remembering that we have a body. Remembering that we're alive. Remembering that we have friends. Remembering that there's fresh air to breathe. You know, it can be anything. You've got to be creative, actually. You've got to be skillful and find the happiness in the moment. So it's really up to us to find it. So I kind of challenge you to make any moment a happy moment. And then when we get skillful with that, then we can actually offer that to our loved ones, to our friends. And it can be really, like a beautiful way to transform a situation, to remember the good conditions that we have. And so I can share a little bit more about the last element, the last ingredient.